Good morning, all. So I'd like to share a few thoughts of adapted from an article from a brother, Michael Atkin, from Canada, and we want to take a look back near the beginning of Jesus' ministry, to a time when he had attracted great multitudes with various diseases and such, and some of the crowd. They were taking a really keen interest in what he was teaching. So he took that opportunity to provide a very detailed instruction to those that were listening and hearing this new preacher. And that event is what became to be known as the Sermon on the Mount. And it's an excellent example it's a model for Christian thinking and action, isn't it? So Jesus, he wanted to demonstrate the real intention behind the Mosaic Law by both what he taught and his way of life. So we know that he didn't come to remove that God-given code in the law, but to show that the real meaning behind it, especially about himself, as we read in Matthew 5, where it says, "Think not that I have come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill." So we know that Jesus, by the time his ministry came about, the law that was holy and just and good had instead been changed into a rigid set of rules. And just think how amazed everyone would have been when Jesus, he shattered their views just by speaking his take on it, and especially when it was delivered with such authority. So I imagine the crowds and multitudes, you know, when you hear something new, something really exciting, and just, "I want a piece of this," and you're listening, you're spellbound. I imagine they would have been like that when they heard all of these new ideas. So when it comes to the Sermon on the Mount, we're just going to dig a little bit, and not too deep. It's a topic that many of us have looked into before, but we can summarise its contents a little bit like this. I'm going to go a bit more, but the Sermon on the Mount teaches us concepts and attitudes that we should aim to develop. The intent of Jesus' words is summed up really nicely by Paul in his letter to the Ephesians, and it's Ephesians 4 verse 22. "You were taught, with regard to your former way of life, to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God, in true righteousness and holiness." So the comments we find at the end of the Sermon on the Mount point to how vital it is that we focus on taking on the way of thinking that our Master has shown us, and put just that little bit of effort in, as we can, to put it into action. So in Matthew 7, 21, we read, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." So, yeah, putting in that effort, it's hard, it's really hard. But knowing that the sure mercies of God are there, we can put that in, knowing that we can achieve much. So, if we look at the first two Beatitudes, they demonstrate this, or poor in spirit, they demonstrate this concept of correct thinking. So, Matthew 5 reads, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And there's a nice margin reference there to Psalms 34 verse 18. "The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit." So I think the lesson here is humility. And it's a great contrast to the average person around us today. We're praised for being aggressive and assertive and succeeding. So it's so hard to be humble. But it does take humility to recognise the fact that our ultimate salvation depends not on us, but completely on the grace of God. Okay, so next one. The absence of humility, it's nothing new, is it? It was shown way back in the day by the pride of the Pharisees and their love of praise from all the people. They drew attention to themselves for making donations. And when they were sort of giving the great prayers in front of the people. Excuse me. But Jesus, he said in Matthew 6, do not be like them. And perhaps the ultimate example between the attitude of pride and humility is in the parable of the tax collector and the sinner. And it reads, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. But the tax collector, standing afar off, would not even lift his eyes up to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Oh, and that's from Luke 18. And Jesus continues to plainly state the problem was the attitude of pride instead of humility. And it goes on, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. So the second beatitude, blessed are those who mourn. It can be a problem if we take this. Sorry, I'm just going to get a drink. So the second beatitude, blessed are those who mourn. It can be a problem if we take this view sort of on face value. Because even a hardened criminal will mourn the death of a loved one, won't they? So how could this blessing include him or her? Well, let's take a look at 1 Thessalonians 4, and that's verse 13. Oh, I'm just going to read it. So, and Paul gives us an answer. Brothers, we do not want to be ignorant about those who fall asleep or grieve like the rest of men who have no hope. Those who are enlightened to the true Christian hope recognize the wages of sin is death, and although the loss is hard, the bereaved, we wait in faith, don't we, with quiet dignity for the promised redemption, resurrection. So a good example is a rich ruler. And he came to Jesus, and he knelt before him and said, my daughter has just died, but come and put your hand on her, and she will live. Jesus got up and went with him. And when Jesus entered the ruler's house and saw the flute players and noisy crowd, he said, go away, the girl is not dead, but asleep. But they laughed at him, and after the crowd had been put outside, he went in, and he took the girl by the hand, and said, and she got up. So, and that was in Matthew 9. And with disregard for the expectations and the rituals of his time, this man, he approached Jesus with complete faith of the resurrection. So godly mourning also occurs when we see the waste and the suffering all over the world, doesn't it? And there is a passage to be found in Isaiah, which helps our understanding. Oh, I've not got a good voice this morning. Let's take that again. There is a passage to be found in Isaiah, which helps our understanding of poor in heart. And I think it illustrates the second aspect of how a believer mourns. And it reads, well, God says, I dwell in a high and holy place, and also with him who is of a contrite and lowly spirit. So this reassures us of the comfort both to the humble and to those who have this sort of attitude. of those who have this sort of attitude, I have seen his ways, but I will heal him. I have led him and restore comfort to him and his mourners. And that was Isaiah 57. So the context of these verses, it's associated with those who greatly mourned for the poor state of the nation as a whole, just as our Lord did, and also for their own sins, something that we all do. So, now, before you get too worried that I'm going to run through all of the Beatitudes, and I could be here for another hour, Let me just assure you from your own past experience of hearing my exhorts that I'm well over two-thirds into it and of what I wanted to share with you today. So just a little bit more. So correct thinking leads to the right action, doesn't it? So let's sum up the underlying message of the remaining Beatitudes. And I'm going to do it like this. So, summing up the remaining Beatitudes. We can see that they are all about the need to set the right attitudes in our minds in such a way that it produces an outcome of correct actions. For example, anger is the precursor to murder. Adultery will not be committed if the heart does not harbour lustful thoughts. Underlying attitudes do govern our actions. I know it's easier said than done, but every effort helps, doesn't it? So Jesus, he ended his teaching with the well-known parable of the house on the rock. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, and the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the stream rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. So that rock, it's a sure foundation that we form, and we keep it strong by following the example of our Lord, whom we have come to remember this morning. So, as we take these emblems, let's especially remember the example of Jesus and his words to those early disciples who sat and listened over 2,000 years ago. So, our task is to approach the challenges with eagerness and optimism, to continue to do our best to put our old ways behind us and to follow the path that leads to the kingdom. So I pray that we will all be granted the opportunity to eat and drink with our Lord at that time.